Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Career Clarity Podcast. And this is your host, Nitil Joshi Balamurugan. Please welcome our special guest, Puneet Irani. Puneet is a computer science engineer working at a startup in San Francisco. And I'll let him tell you the rest of his story.
Hey everyone, I'm Puneet. I'm a recent computer science graduate, and I'm currently working for a fintech startup in San Francisco, working on basically everything from back-end, front-end, and infrastructure. And I'm also a co-founder of Prostify, working with some personal finance projects. And before that, I was at Noco working and leading the embedded machine learning team. But yeah, I'm pretty excited to be here. And thanks for hosting me, Nitil.
Yes, no problem. Puneet, tell me about Prostify.
Yeah. So a quick background about Prostify. So we started off at the UC Berkeley AI Hackathon in the summer of 2023. It was basically the peak of the AI hype with LLMs, and their grand prize was a 50K VC investment from Berkeley Skydeck into the top four winning teams. And we happened to be one of the four winning teams of, I believe, over 200 contestants or close to 200 contestants.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. So we initially started off as an AI financial advisor. So basically a place where people can go and input their financials, their bank accounts, investments, and it basically connects through Plaid, and we can essentially fetch all your financial history, your spending habits, and then we're essentially able to tailor financial advice for individuals, because a lot of the time, if you have to get your own personal financial advisor, you're pitching in over $2,000-$3,000 on average, between $5,000 to $10,000 a year, and most middle to even upper middle class people can't afford that or don't want to afford that. So yeah, we initially tried to do that. And like with any startup, you kind of have to pivot at some point if things don't work out. One of the main things that we learned through trying this and building this product was that people would be willing to use it. Two main problems. And the first problem was people don't want to pay for it. That's essentially one of the big problems that we found with B2C companies is it's so hard to convince normal everyday Joes to give you like $10, $20 a month. And we realized that that wasn't sustainable. And the second issue we found with building a fintech product, especially for personal finance, was that most people aren't willing to connect their bank account to a random startup. So yeah, especially without data, you can't do much. It's very limited in terms of what you can do. Yeah, it was our first time, so it was a lot of learning, and we had to build everything from scratch. So it was definitely a good learning experience, and probably we probably wasted like 6 to 8 months building this, aside from like all the things we learned. But eventually we had to pivot, and even right now we're just spending essentially working on it part-time to explore what we can do in the personal finance space.
How does Prostify work? Is it a mobile app that I can download on my phone?
Yeah. So right now, from the start, we've essentially focused fully web app, mainly because it's pretty hard to build a mobile app. Most companies that you know now too, they either don't have a mobile app or they built a mobile app once they've achieved product market fit. So mainly for time's sake and prototyping, we just decided to build a web app. So it's a fully like Next.js-based web application.
I understand that you're currently working with a lot of AI and fintech now, but how exactly did you get into computer science?
Yeah. So I think the first time I ever wrote a code, I was probably, I'll probably have to say like 12 years old. I was working a lot with hardware, a lot of electrical stuff. I was building circuits, like mini Arduino-based radar systems, things like that, using ultrasound sensors back when I was like probably like 11, 12 years old. And at that point, when I was writing Arduino code, I didn't really know what programming was. I kind of just learned how to code by pattern recognition. I kind of understood that, oh, a double is like used to store a decimal, but like an integer is only used to store like a normal integer, for example. I didn't really know much about data types, for example. It was just kind of looking at the previous code and understanding what works and what doesn't. Same when it came to algorithms too, or functions, for example. I don't really take or watch YouTube videos. It's just looking at code that other people have written and learning from that. Yeah, that was my initial start. But like most of my current foundations was in high school. So in high school, I was doing rocketry. And for the rocketry club that I started, we're building air brakes for rockets. And that required us to take Arduino stuff to the next level. And we had to build some prediction models and altitude estimation algorithms. And
Interesting. Okay.
that was the first time where we essentially built something that was like a real-time control system.
Okay, got it. So when you got program, like what like language did you use, or was it just like block code?
I honestly started with C. It was C, C++. So Arduino is based, it's almost like a dialect of, I believe, it's C++. So that's how I started off. It was mostly C++ with Arduino. But obviously, along with that, it was a bit of Python after like a year or two.
Got it, yeah.
But honestly, like starting with C just builds such a good foundation for a lot of computer science.
I know a lot of people who start with Python to begin with, but I think it's kind of cool to see someone who started with C. Okay, so what particular courses or projects really shaped your path through computer science?
Through high school, like the main project was definitely with rocketry, like building the air brake. It was, I believe, at that time, and probably it might still be one of the smallest air brakes for a sport rocket that we built. It was for a competition, so the goal was to hit a particular altitude, and definitely like building an air brake, which is a mix of both like mechanical, electrical, and software engineering, was like one that really shaped my interest in engineering. That really like basically reiterated to myself that, hey, like I really like building stuff, so I should do this in college.
I see that you're very interested in rocketry and everything during high school. So, do you do anything related to that in your college time?
Yeah, so I mean, like at this point, it's like pretty, it seemed pretty obvious that I like rocketry and aerospace engineering, so that's what I enrolled at ASU as well. I initially started off as an aerospace engineering major, but even in college, I was doing avionics systems for a bigger rocket that we were designing. And slowly, I think it took me a year to realize that, hey, like I kind of like coding the systems that goes in a rocket more than building the rocket itself. So
Okay,
I was doing a lot of electrical and like software engineering. So yeah, it was honestly like taking aerospace engineering courses, which I really honestly do advise because it's pretty challenging and teaches a lot of the physical world. And
yeah.
then, yeah, a year later, I kind of realized, hey, like, I don't think the CS knowledge I know is sufficient for me. So that's when I decided to take CS. But even before that, I was minoring in computational math, which was a mix between like CS and, yeah.
Just making sure you moved from aerospace to computer science just because you felt like aerospace was just so computer science heavy and you needed a better understanding of that, right?
Yeah, at that point, I was just doing like a lot of the side projects I was doing, even if it was like building a rocket, like in terms of building a rocket too, it was mostly building like the avionics systems of a rocket, which requires a lot of code that needs to be written, especially like the positioning and navigation system, for example. Like you need to be able to like essentially smooth out the noises in the sensors and the GPS receiver, for example, and like build essentially like a state model for the rocket in terms of like where exactly it is. So that was that project, and I had a couple other side projects I was working on at that point, which was all like circulating back to a lot of like CS stuff more than aerospace and mechanical engineering.
Okay, got it. So what was your experience like studying computer science at ASU?
I'll be honest, like honestly, like CS for me was very easy at ASU. Like there's probably been one or two classes out of like the 50 or so that I've taken that have really required me to spend a lot of time. But to be fair, I was never the type to like just grind out classes and always try to get 100% on all classes or like A pluses. I just did enough to learn, and that's essentially like been my like motto too through college is like I don't really care about grades. And to be fair, I did pretty good grades wise too. So ASU was honestly like relatively easy for CS. It's
So how are the opportunities at ASU? Do you think they were sufficient for you, or did you have to look elsewhere for a lot of them? Also, do you think ASU is a school you would recommend to someone trying to pursue CS right now?
honestly, like if you're in state and you can get a full ride or a mostly full ride, like I would totally recommend ASU. If it's especially if it's like free college, like how I would like from my experience in hindsight, like how I would use ASU is basically going to class and spending as little time as possible to learn the core foundations, but maximizing the time outside of classes to do extracurriculars. Early on, because of my switch, I didn't get to really dabble into like research or there are different programs like Fury and GCSB at ASU. And just because of my planning at that point where I was in aerospace, I didn't really have the opportunity to do research, for example, early on. It took me like over, I only did research like the end of my junior year, for example. So I do think there's a lot of opportunities to do research at ASU. It is a public school, so you just have to be cognizant that, hey, like you're going to be competing against probably like 1,000 other people. Especially considering, I'm pretty sure CS might be like one of the most popular majors at ASU now. So you just have to know that you're going to be competing against a lot of people. But at the same time, like it does teach you the foundations. It is by no means going to be state of the art or the most up to date. Most of the classes and content are probably a decade old. So yeah, very few classes you're going to be learning about things that you're going to be like very enthused about and excited about just because it's a lot of foundational and theoretical classes. So at least, yeah, just my main takeaway would be ASU is worth it as long as it's free and as long as you can maximize the time outside of classes to do research, to go work and do internships during the school year, and to just work on side projects. And like, if you can build a startup, like to just do it during your like
So,
undergrad.
got it. So, like, Prospify was in your sophomore year of college?
It was the actually it was senior year. It was the summer after junior year.
Okay. So, I know that you work at a startup now. So, tell me a little bit about that. Like, why exactly? I know you live in San Francisco. So why exactly do you decide to work at a startup rather than like a big tech company?
Yeah. Honestly, like I've always been the type to love just building everything from scratch and getting a full grasp of how everything works. Even before my current work at my start at the startup, even during my undergrad, like my sophomore year of college, I started interning in at a small company called Noko. So I've been working there for over 3 years. So even before I graduated college, I was there for like 3 years essentially, and it was a small team. And I got to lead essentially one of their flagship products at that point. And what that did was like really give me exposure to everything from electrical engineering to like a good understanding of hardware engineering on how like you can mass produce things. And lastly, it was obviously firmware engineering. And after all of this, I got the opportunity to start the machine learning team at Noko. So basically, like Noko was like a defining point in my life where I was like, hey, like I really like working with small teams and taking initiative to do beyond what is assigned to me. And honestly, I feel like working at a startup is probably the best way to learn because things are always failing and you constantly need to learn. And also at the same time, you're not just assigned a small part of a larger project. You're basically given the entire project and they're like, hey, anything can happen. You need to be there to fix it. And at the same time, we need you to build something that can generate money. So it's honestly like very almost entertaining and like fun for me to being able to understand like, hey, how companies make money and how we can build great products that actually like make an impact. And I feel
Got
like
it.
a startup's the best place to do that. So Noko, when I worked there, even now, so they do a lot of consumer electronics, automotive electronics. One of their flagship products is a jump starter. I think it's probably the number one selling jump starter on Amazon right now.
Okay.
The most powerful and yeah, one of the best jump starters. And when I joined Noko, they were looking to diversify into a lot of other consumer electronics. So the project that I led there was the air compressors project. So they were launching an air compressor, a consumer air compressor. And it was going to be, and it currently is probably the most powerful air compressor for its size. It is very tiny, but it's like a very powerful. So essentially, they were doing that, and now they're venturing into, they haven't released it yet, but they're venturing into vacuums and a few other consumer electronics. So, like, yeah, not the fanciest state-of-the-art stuff, but a lot of consumer electronics.
Interesting. So tell me about the startup that you work at currently.
So I currently work at Slashed, and basically what Slashed does is they're corporate credit cards with high cash back. So say you're like a ticket reseller or a marketing agency, and you're taking in or you're buying in like ad spots or like you're buying tickets to resell. You're essentially circulating money basically. Like you're buying goods and you're selling it back to another customer, for example. Usually you have credit cards like Chase or even like Brex or even like other Corpay cards. And they essentially give you some amount of cash back, if any. So they give you like between 0 and 0.5 usually. And basically what Slash does is it gives you around 2%, if not more, on most of the purchases. So if you're doing like $1 million and like ticket reselling like per month, for example, right? You can make like an additional 2% on that just by using a Slash credit card. And I joined there recently. So I'm basically still onboarding right now, but a lot of the projects that I'll be working on will essentially be scaling the company right now. So we've essentially 10x quarterly revenue over the last year. So I believe Q4 of 2024 was 10x Q4 of 2023. So we're
That's
essentially
incredible.
looking to scale the platform, and it's pretty unreliable just because of like how fast we've been shipping and like how fast Slash has been growing. So I'll probably be working on like making the entire platform very stable and at the same time reliable to make sure it's always up and it doesn't go down as much as it does go down now. Obviously, like making a lot of other improvements to the UI, the user experience, but yeah, short term is definitely going to be like stability and reliability work.
Got it. Okay. So, Puneet, what exactly would you be doing at Slash?
So at Slash, I'll be doing a lot of backend engineering. So right now, one of the things I'm working on is essentially like making the document store a lot faster. So we use S3 to store user documents, whatever user uploads. It's been mostly like recent additions to both onboarding, user transcripts, like receipts, things like that. And I'm essentially trying to make querying updates a lot faster. And at the same time, trying to use AI to make some of the onboarding process smoother. So once we do continue to add more users, it's like a lot easier to onboard users. And the compliance team, for example, is able to go through the documents a lot faster because we have customers from all over the world. And like being able to analyze passports, for example, and extract information from passports to make sure that users have the right documents uploaded, things like that. That's one of the projects. And in terms of the other background projects would be the actual like storage and querying of the documents. Once you have like hundreds of thousands of documents with a lot of complex relationships, it can get pretty slow to query the documents. So I'm essentially revamping the way the documents are stored right now and query to make sure that you can essentially search documents like blazing fast.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, so I'm gonna move away from like the startup topic. And so, as a computer science engineer, do you find AI as a threat or a tool to your job? At least in like the near future, even if it's not currently.
I honestly think AI is definitely a tool. I don't find AI to be a threat at all. I've used AI, at least like ChatGPT, basically since the day it became publicly available. I think it was like late 2022 is when I started using ChatGPT, and that was at a point when like even professors didn't know what it was. And then I started using the APIs pretty early on. Like that was late 2022 as well, but mostly early 2023 is when I started using the APIs. And honestly, like from my experience, it's gonna be the biggest and best tool that any software engineer can use, honestly. At Slash, for example, we use Cursor every single day to code, and it makes coding so much faster. And same with my work at Noko, and that was a company that's like, I'll say, pretty tech averse. From when I joined, there's like a lot of people were hesitant to use AI because they thought that AI would be useless, basically. But I think slowly I've helped them realize that, hey, like AI can actually like, or LLMs and like a cursor, like IDEs, for example, can actually save you time. And more importantly, it can like make your job a lot more fun because now you're not writing a lot of boilerplate code because it's like, at least like when you're writing code, it's a lot of boilerplate code that needs to be written at some point, and that's the most tedious stuff that you don't want to do. Especially when you're building a large scale system, it's like it's going to be the smallest change, for example, that's very hard to find. And having like an AI that indexes your entire code base, and you can be like, hey, like find me where exactly the transactions are being processed, for example. Especially if you're like a new engineer there who doesn't know, or if you're an engineer who doesn't work on a specific aspect of the application, like it can essentially save time and do a lot of things that honestly makes your job a lot easier. In terms of like as a threat, I feel like a lot of people, especially non-tech people, are like, oh wow, like yeah, AI is gonna take a lot of software engineers' jobs and is gonna replace software engineers. Like I'll be honest, like AI currently hallucinates so much that if you're trying to build a stable like software engineer replacement, even Devin, for example, it honestly can't in most cases. Obviously it's a lot of hype. If you go on Twitter, for example, you'll find a lot of people being like, oh wow, like look at this cool thing that I built with Cursor or like Replit, V0. And if you notice, these are all small things that are very basic. It's almost like something like a sophomore college student would build, right? So I feel like that's where it shines, is like replacing like junior engineer at most. Even then it hallucinates a lot to make it really stable. But I feel like where software engineers are going to slowly pivot to is like being able to solve problems more than write code. Because a lot of times, like, you need to be able to know what exactly to do. And writing code is honestly just a medium to like solve a problem.
I agree. I've heard this before as well, where how effective AI is really depends on how well you instruct it to do something.
Yeah, exactly. And especially like when you're building such like a large scale system, like currently AI, like a lot of AIs or tools can't fully understand how these components work together. Like let's say you have like a microservice architecture with like three different microservices, like two, three databases, things like that. Like it's very hard for an AI to build and manage such a system. I do think that AI is going to get better to the point where it will be able to do it. But like yeah, it makes a lot of small bugs that most humans don't currently, especially if you ask it to do a lot like a complex project. So yeah, it's honestly going to come down to the end user being able to understand how the systems work and like telling the AI what to do exactly.
Okay, got it. Okay, so what would your advice be to CS students who are just starting out? Like, this can be like projects or anything.
Honestly, like I would say for a CS student to be balanced, just keep in mind that you're still a student, so your main goal should be to learn, not build necessarily. Obviously, it's like definitely worth building products, but what AI shouldn't become is like a crutch to you, where without AI, you're not able to code. I've seen that happen so much, where especially like over the last year, where some of my classmates use AI too much to the point where they don't know how to code, for example. Or more than they don't know how to code, it's like they don't know how code works. Like they don't understand the fundamentals, the foundations. And I feel like that's going to be a problem where if a person without AI doesn't understand, like, hey, like I don't really understand like how a message queue works, for example, like it's going to be a lot harder for you to build systems in that case. Or like even the foundations, if you don't know like the basics of like DFS or like breadth first search, depth first search, or some of the core algorithms, recursion, for example, it sounds so silly, but it honestly doesn't matter until when it does matter, and then you're kind of like, oh, I kind of wish I learned that or paid attention.
Got it.
So like I still would say to use AI when it's needed, but to learn how CS concepts work. Yeah, more than like coding, it just comes down to like theoretical CS that you should learn. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, especially if you're building like a large scale system, Like even if you're able to like make an algorithm like let's say 10% faster, if you're building a system that processes like a million transactions a day, for example, right? If it's 10 seconds faster, you're probably saving like hundreds, if not like thousands of dollars in like runtime. And on top of that, like the customer experience is going to be like a lot better too. Things aren't like clogging up and like there's no bottlenecks slowing things down. So yeah, for sure.
Got it. Okay. So tell me about your experience with hackathons. I know Prospify got off the ground with hackathons.
Honestly, started hackathons pretty late. My first hackathon was my second semester of my junior year. I honestly did my first hackathon to travel to New York. I needed an excuse to go to New York City. And during spring break, they had a hackathon at Stony Brook University. And I was like, hey, like, I'm gonna sign up for this and I'm gonna go there, travel by myself, make friends, and like compete at the hackathon. And I'll
That's
be
cool.
honest, like, yeah, hackathons have like honestly changed the way I've code and like I've networked and especially over the last like year and a half, I've probably been to over like 14-ish hackathons. I've
Wow.
mentored two and like I've judged at MIT this year. And like honestly, like my biggest advice to, like CS students would be if you can find a hackathon or like some sort of a way where you're given a weekend and you're given a problem to solve and your goal is to like solve the problem using code, like do it honestly. Like worst case, you come out of it with a product. But the best case is like you might win money or you might make lifelong friends. And most importantly, like you're gonna learn a lot. And like at least like this is just like personal anecdote and like my advice is at my first hackathon, my partner there was Ashay, and Ashay essentially became my co-founder at Prospify. So yeah, he was the first person I ever met at a hackathon, and like now we're like lifelong friends, for example. We ended up creating a startup and we talk all the time and yeah. So
Very
it gets
cool.
there and yeah, and there's also been points where if you go to like a few hackathons, you kind of realize that the CS world is like kind of small, especially the ones who like really work hard or like people who really are really out there. There's been cases where I've met people and like I've met other people and I'm like, oh, like have you met this guy? He's like, oh yeah, like we're close friends. Or they're like, oh yeah, like oh yeah, like I've worked with him on this project, or yeah, I'm gonna create a startup with him, for example. There's been a lot of cases where you kind of realize that like it's a very connected space. So you can honestly make a lot of like good network, like networking with people who are in the industry and also learn a lot of things. And most importantly, like it's honestly like probably the most enriching thing as like a software engineer is to like build something that goes outside the classroom. And to actually build something that goes off of your local computer. Because most CS classes don't teach you how to build things that anyone can access in the world. It's usually running on your computer and it's just a small little program too. So I would totally, totally recommend going to hackathons as much as possible. You get free food. Some of them even pay you to go there. Some of them cover your flight. Some of them give you housing. Like it's honestly worth it.
Wow, okay. I will definitely participate in a hackathon soon enough.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
So, the very last question that I have for you is for students like me who are in high school, what is the number one project you would say to like go and try?
Yeah, honestly, I will say to build something that you really like. It honestly doesn't matter what you build. It genuinely doesn't when you're in high school because you're still figuring a lot of things out. And one thing you'll realize is whenever you're building things, it's gonna fail. Like it's not all gonna be glamorous and it's gonna fail. And if you pick a hard project or like in a field that you don't like, for example, like what's gonna happen is you're gonna give up like soon enough. So even before you choose a project, all I'll say is to do something and to do hard things. It doesn't matter what you do, honestly. Like whatever you do now, take it to the next level and like keep pushing that and innovating in a way where you're constantly learning.
Got it, got it. Okay.
Because like that's yeah, that's honestly like the greatest way to learn.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Puneet. It really means a lot to me. I'm also very happy because I learned a lot more than I thought I would. And thank you so much for being here. I would definitely love to have you on the podcast again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Neto. It was great talking to you.
Thank you to everyone who listened to the podcast today. See you next episode.